Alrighty, we are ready to begin. I'm Lisa Braithwaite, public speaking coach and trainer and host of the Audience Avenger Alliance speaker series. There was a weird pause there because what I really meant to say is the Audience Avenger Alliance program, and this is the speaker series of the Audience Avenger Alliance. The Audience Avenger Alliance is a membership program for both experienced and novice speakers who want to break out of the routine and actually stand out as someone who serves the audience in a memorable and engaging way. Our motto is, we liberate audiences worldwide from dastardly presentations by rising above the status quo and delivering bold and courageous messages. You will see a link to the left on the screen. If you are on the teleseminar webpage, you'll see a link to the left on the screen that goes to the Audience Avenger Alliance page, and you can get more information there if you're curious, and you'll get the link at the end as well, and it'll be on the recording. It'll also be in the email that you get. Now, I'm just going to jump right in and start chatting with Tammy because we're being sneaky this month and we are pre-recording. So we don't have anybody on the call today asking questions or making comments because we couldn't get our schedules together. That's what it's like to be an entrepreneur sometimes. So there's no chat boxes, no question boxes, nothing like that today. It's just going to be me and Tammy having a little conversation. Just so you know, though, there are times when I get booted off Skype or something like that. So if the call goes silent for a little while, if there's a little empty space in there, it may be because one of us got booted off and then we jumped back on. So just so you know, if you hear some silence on the call, just hang in there and we will come back. So let me tell you first a little bit about Tammy Witten. She is a good friend of mine who I met through another program you might have heard of, OBBW. If you have been listening to the Audience Avenger Alliance speaker series, you heard me interview Alicia Forrest a couple months ago on how to hold a live event. And this is one of the things that she's really great at her online business building workshop, or online business breakthrough workshop. Wait, Tammy.
What am I talking about?
Online business breakthrough. Tammy, help.
I'm waiting for Sandra to jump out and quiz you.
God, I'm so embarrassed. I hope Alicia doesn't get on this call and hear me say the name of her program wrong. Anyway, OBBW, really awesome business breakthrough workshop that she holds in New Hampshire every year. And Tammy and I met at this event, as attendees at this event, and we've become great accountability partners, checking in pretty much daily to see what we are getting done in our businesses. So it's been really fun getting to know Tammy that way. And then we also have a lot of weird things in common, some of our taste in food and our taste in socks and our need to stay in the house and not go anywhere and nest and hibernate. So those are just a few of the things we discovered that we have in common. So here's a little bit about Tammy that's more official and less my own personal opinion. After hearing too many stories of people trying to connect to a therapist who really got it, Tammy decided it was time to leave university teaching and to open her own practice. And she had spent many years working with families in hospitals, schools, churches, nonprofits, and with people in their homes, and this had given her the insight to know what people were really looking for, and that was real-life strategies that are simple to implement but yet yield miraculous results in daily life situations. So Tammy, using very simple steps and a down-to-earth style, which you'll hear when we start talking to her, she helps women, she helps couples, and she helps families to find a personalized approach that works best for them in therapy. And instead of focusing on people's deficits, Tammy likes to help her clients improve on their strengths and to let those work for her clients to give faster success. And that's another thing that we both have in common. I also really like working with my clients' strengths around speaking, not their weaknesses, although we always have to look at the things that challenge us and, you know, figure out how to make those things less of a challenge, but I really like to focus on people's strengths. So that's another thing we have in common. And for Tammy, even when she's outside of the office, she's always looking for new ways to solve. I can't read or speak. It's Friday. Give me a break. It's like afternoon on Friday. Give me a break, people. Tammy is always looking for new ways to solve age-old stressors. So no matter if she's mowing the yard, sewing quilts, baking cookies, or driving down the road, Tammy is always finding new insights and analogies about stress and anxiety. And she really does do all those things. She's every day she's like sewing something, baking something. She's always reporting back about some cake she made or some cookies she made and making me crazy because I'm trying not to be naughty. And the last thing I'll tell you about Tammy is that she's a geek. Another thing we have in common, she loves to do things like converting Newton's laws of motion into the laws of relationships. She loves staying on top of the latest research. I know she's pretty nerdy that way. And she loves transforming knowledge into fearless solutions for the real world. And she also loves trying to fix all the machines she seems to constantly break. And she says, you know, finding ways to fix all the machines because she really does fix. I mean, I should have her tell you a story about just fixing one of her machines. Maybe she has an analogy for public speaking about one of the things she's fixed. Because she's always telling me all these crazy things that she's done around the house, like full-on MacGyver action going on at Tammy's house. So, Tammy, is there anything else you would like to tell us? I actually said you're a therapist, but you probably have a more fancy title with letters and stuff that you want to share.
Oh, I don't like all the alphabet soup stuff. I mean, the easiest way to, like, the technical term is I'm a marriage and family therapist, but basically all that means is I look at relationships. So I look at relationships to your anxiety and to the things that you don't want to let go of. I let go of your relationships to your family, your friends, apparently to your sneezes, because I'm getting ready to do that too. But how all of the things in your life impact you and not just, you know, because most time when we think of relationships, we think of like a significant other. But I have a relationship to the table that was in my grandma's house growing up, and you always cracked your knee on it. And so you learn to hate the table. So we have connections to everything around us, and they either make us feel great or they make us feel a little bit on edge and nervous.
Oh, I love that. I love that we have the concept that we have relationships not just with people, but also with things and with our thoughts and with our behaviors, and that those can all be considered relationships. And today we're going to be focusing on the relationship that a lot of speakers have with anxiety and how certain ways of thinking can cause more anxiety for speakers. And so Tammy's going to help you. She's going to explain some of these concepts, and then she's going to give you some tools for changing that around. And I wanted to give you a little background on how we came up with this topic. About 7 years ago, I had a client who was a doctoral candidate in clinical psychology, and she ran a weekly inpatient group for people with depression. And she told me about this weekly group that she ran where they focused on this thing called thought traps. And she described it to me as ways of thinking that create negativity and keep us from seeing the positive in our lives. And I thought, wow, okay, so she was working with people who were experiencing depression. And so those people might experience thought traps as a real significant part of their illness. But we all experience these same thought traps, and it really hit me how especially I hear these things from my clients about speaking. And so, you know, we all experience these things from time to time, but in particular, they pop up around stressful situations like a speaking engagement. So Tammy did a class on this recently about something she calls thinking styles, and I was in the class, and I saw her handout, and I heard her talking about the thinking styles, and I thought, oh my God, those are the thought traps. Those are the things I learned about like 7 years ago, and you know, was thinking about how they relate to speaking. And so that's when I asked Tammy to come and talk on the Audience Avenger Alliance speaker series, because it's the first step to changing the way you think about public speaking is to recognize it, right? So if you are able to recognize some of your thinking styles around public speaking by listening to what Tammy has to share with you today, then you can start changing them. And you can change the way you view public speaking altogether, view yourself as a speaker, view the audience that you're speaking in front of, and view the general concept of public speaking. So Tammy is going to jump in and start sharing. She's going to share three, unless we have all kinds of extra time. And then she might throw a few more in. But she's going to share three of the thinking styles that are really, or I should say unhelpful thinking styles. They're not just thinking styles in general. They're unhelpful thinking styles. So she's going to talk about a couple of those, and then she's going to give you some tools to kind of turn this around and turn that negative into a positive. So, Tammy, take it away.
All right. Well, thanks for having me. Before I kind of get into it, I want to preface things by saying that whether you love public speaking or whether you're one of those people where sometimes the thought just makes you a little terrified and nauseous even, one thing I want to reassure everyone is everybody gets nervous or some anxiety when they speak. And when I say that, to me, anxiety is a part of life, and there's actually positive anxiety and there's negative anxiety. So I actually enjoy it. I probably don't do it as much in public anymore as I used to. I do more of it virtually like this. But before I would get up to teach a class at the university or I give a speech somewhere, I would get these little bubbles in my stomach, and instead of it being something that made me want to run away and hide in the bathroom, it was one of those things of, oh, I'm getting ready to do this. And so that's still a form of anxiety, you know, even though it's more of a positive, fun one. And so don't think that you're weird if you get nervous or even excited about doing anything with speaking in whatever capacity you do it in. Feel normal about it. And that's one of the things I want us to focus on. And that's actually one of the tools that helps with these unhelpful thinking styles, is realizing how normal you are instead of, oh my gosh, everyone's looking at me and I'm up here without my clothes on and they know that I'm nervous kind of thing. So to start off with, I want to tell you a story that kind of helps set the tone for a lot of kind of what we're talking about. And it's about these two angels. And they're traveling, and there's a kind of an older one and kind of a newer one. And the more experienced angel, I might refer to him as the senior angel, he's supposed to train the younger one on the ways of what they do and how they go about helping people. So the first night, they knock on a door, and they stay at this house, and they're really wealthy. But the people are really kind of greedy and mean to them. So they don't give them a whole lot of food. They make them sleep in the basement that night. It's kind of cold. You know, the floor is a little hard. And before they leave the next morning, the senior angel gets up, and he fixes a hole in the wall. And the junior angel's going, wow, I'm learning a lot here about compassion. You know, he's doing something nice for people who probably don't deserve it. So they go about their day. And the next night, they stay at another house. And this is a really poor farmer and his wife. And they have hardly nothing. I mean, it's just so sad. But they share everything that they have. And they're giving them food, and they're insisting on seconds and thirds. And they're like, please, you have to sleep in our bed tonight. You know, we'll be fine on the floor, on the couch. And the junior angels feel like, wow, you know, I can't believe we're taking all this hospitality from them. They need it more than we do. And the next morning when they get up, the cow's dead outside. And they're wailing, going, how in the world are we going to eat? That was our milk cow. That's how we got through things. And they left the house, and the junior angel, he's just fussing at his mentor, saying, what in the world? You help the greedy people, and then you let the poor people who were really, really kind suffer. And the whole time, the senior angel just keeps going, things aren't what they appear to be to you. You're looking at it one way. I help the greedy people. The poor people are suffering. But really? He said, at the other house, the hole in the wall was hiding their gold. And they're so greedy, so I fixed the hole, not trying to fix a hole in the wall, but trying to keep them from getting to their gold. In the case of the farmer and his wife, again, not what it seems. Yeah, they lost their cow. But last night, the angel of death came and wanted to take the farmer's wife, and I bargained with him, and he took the cow instead. So things aren't what we picture them to be. And when we're presenting, whether we're excited or nervous or not, as presenters, we're constantly looking at our audience. Are they paying attention? Are they soaking it in? Are they engaged? Are they looking down at their phones? Are they going out of the room? Is the audience shrinking? We're constantly trying to get feedback. And what we're perceiving as presenters is not always the reality of what's going on with the audience. And that's one of the things that can amp up our anxiety. So whatever that worry is speaking, whether it's I can't pronounce this word I have to do in my presentation or whatever it may be, remember that it's not always how you perceive the issue. It may not be that important to your audience. So what I want us to do is introduce these three thinking styles and then give you some examples of maybe when they come and creep in a little bit. And Lisa, feel free to interject. And then I want to give you some ways to reverse them. So
well,
there's
I have
about
to say one thing.
Go
Sorry
for
to
it.
Interrupt. I was really sad about the cow.
Me too.
That story broke my heart. Well, of course, because I love animals so much, I was sad about the cow. But I really was sad about the people who now their source of milk is gone. And I thought, I totally get the story. And at the same time, I'm like, couldn't they have?
I know.
Some way around that. But I love the concept of things aren't always what they seem. And especially when you are looking at your audience. So I like that you brought that up. I've had the most stone-faced people in my audiences sitting there with their arms crossed and their foreheads furrowed and thought, oh, God, these people are so bored and they're annoyed and they clearly are having a terrible time. And then afterwards they came up to me and said, wow, I got so much out of it. I really enjoyed your talk, et cetera, et cetera. And then I started to learn that that's just what some people look like. You know, their
yeah.
face, their mouths turned down, or they're more comfortable sitting with their arms crossed, or when they're thinking, when they're really deeply thinking, they furrow their brow, you know. So I like that you brought this up first thing, because a lot of our perceptions of the audience, as you said, really trigger that anxiety when things are not actually what they seem.
And that I have found in terms of the audience reaction. Sadly, I'm great at gauging people when I've got my therapist hat on in my office and I'm helping them. But when I'm presenting, because I'm in that presentation mode and I'm not as intimate, I don't know their stories, I find mm-hmm. that often my perception is off. And the people who I've thought absolutely hated things, usually they're my biggest cheerleaders later, and the ones that I think are engaged, I never hear or see from them, or, you know, no comments. So.
Yeah, that's funny. You never
know. Oh, I
can know.
Tell you horror stories later. So, we'll save those for another call. So in my world, working with anxiety, there are these 10 styles that are kind of notorious for taking over, especially in terms of anxiety. And in many ways, they're kind of interrelated to each other. So I tried to pick the three that I think are kind of most different for us to focus on. And then I think I was really getting into which ones I think would really hit us. And with public speaking, it can be a whole lot of context. It doesn't have to mean that you're in this audience full of a lot of people. It can be a class. It can be a presentation. It can be a call like this. I mean, there's just so many ways. So I was trying to think of all those ways that we deliver messages to people. So the first one that we're going to hit on is all or nothing thinking, and we'll get to that in a little bit. Jumping to conclusions, and kind of as a part of that, we tend to mind read or kind of fortune tell, predict what's going to happen. And then the third one is we have these beliefs of I absolutely should do this or I must do this for my presentation to be great. And we kind of get really critical and maybe a little anal trying to dictate what has to happen. So to give you some examples of what these three things look like when we're speaking. With all or nothing thinking, you may have a thought like, all speakers must feel so calm before they go on stage. I don't see them breathing deeply. I don't see them running around for an inhaler like I feel like I need. They're never fighting off a panic attack right before they step on stage. It's got to just be me. I must be the fraud in all of this. And so it's that black and white thinking. If I don't see it, if I don't recognize it in somebody else, then they don't have it. It's just me. An example of the next one, well, actually, I've got another example of that, which is kind of what we talked on earlier. I never get any feedback after I speak. No one comes up to me and shares anything earth-shattering that changed for them. No one ever sends me an email that says how it changed their life or their business or their relationship. I must not know what I'm talking about. And that's another case of things aren't what they really seem. You may never know the impact, or you may get feedback years down the line when you least expect it from people.
That is such a good example, because that happens all the time. Mm-hmm. You know, where somebody contacts me years later after a speaking engagement. They just didn't need me then. They didn't need what I was offering at that time, but they remembered and they were impacted by the message. And something that I see speakers do a lot too is, you know, they'll think things like, I forgot to make that point, or I stumbled over my words, or I looked at the floor too much, or whatever. But instead of just looking at those as, oh, you know, I made a little mistake, or it was, you know, this minor thing, they just declare the whole presentation to be a disaster. If one little thing goes wrong, everything went wrong. And
that happens a lot. No, and yeah. I was just sitting here thinking, you know, I tend to not be a very woo-woo person. I'm not even a woo-woo kind of thing. But one thing I've kind of...
Another thing we have in common.
Exactly. But I've allowed myself to chalk up to, there are some times when you are sharing things with people and the whole topic takes a different direction entirely than you had intended. And often it's because of the discussion or the thoughts from the people. So I chalk it up to, this is the message they needed to hear. Same thing if I forget to share something. It's, you know what, we needed to spend more time on this, or we needed it to end a few minutes early so they could really have this point hit home. And I just chalk it up to, there's a reason, this is what I can do better next time, and I try not to dwell on it. Easier said than done some days, but.
Oh, absolutely. And I like that you brought that up too, because that's one of the things that I try to get my clients to do, is kind of reframe those mistakes. Like if you forgot what you consider to be an important point, you can just say to yourself, you know what, everybody forgets things sometimes. I'm no different. And the audience didn't even know I forgot. That doesn't make my whole presentation a failure, you know. You also touched on, what am I going to do differently next time, right? Because there's always an action you can take. You know, there's always an action you can take when you have this all or nothing thinking, and you find yourself coming out of a presentation thinking, you know, I totally blew it. It was a disaster. Or like you said, I don't see everybody else running around out of breath. You know, I must be the one who doesn't know what I'm doing. And there's always an action step you can take. You can look at that and say, okay, what will I do next time so that thing doesn't happen, you know? So there, you know, I think a lot of times people too feel a little bit trapped by their thoughts.
Yeah. And I think in terms of an audience perspective, if I go hear someone that's this renowned expert, I'm excited to hear knowledge, but I also want to see their humanity. So any mistake or stumble that they make, I just love them the more for it. And I feel like I can relate more to them, because in terms of some of the things you share, I am an awkward dork. And so I want to feel like they get me. And I almost forgot that example. I was so excited to go on and share the second example with you. I almost skipped it entirely. And apparently I didn't. I don't know if anyone noticed that. Like, oh, yeah, I need to share this one with you. But you just go with the flow.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the biggest thing to remind people of is that when you make a mistake or you forget something or whatever, most of the time, nobody has any idea.
No.
Yeah.
All right. So the second example I was so excited to share with everyone, and so we're talking about jumping to conclusions, and this is where we tend to mind read and fortune tell and predict everything. So if you've ever thought, gee, everybody's looking down at their phones, I've got to be really boring to them. I spent all this time preparing and no one's getting anything out of the presentation. What a downer. Meanwhile, everybody's looking down at their phone because they're adding in notes in Evernote about what you're saying, or they're tweeting and making comments about your presentation, or they're making sure that their sick kid has a way home from school so they can actually stay there and not have to rush out. So things, again, aren't always what we perceive them to be when we're trying to mind read and figure out. And if you've ever altered your presentation based on what you're thinking that they're doing, sometimes it works out great. And other times they look up at you like, what? I'm confused. Where did this sudden turn come from? Because you're trying to entertain them or do something to get them more engaged.
Hmm. I like that. Yeah. And, you know, when we talk about jumping to conclusions or especially like the fortune telling, which you haven't specifically touched on yet, but, you know, we always want to jump straight to the negative, right?
Mm-hmm.
Somebody asks you a challenging question and you think they're out to get you when really they just really are trying to understand, you know,
yeah.
Or somebody, you know, jumps up and leaves and you think, oh my God, they hated this presentation so much that
mm-hmm.
they're leaving in the middle of it. Well, maybe they actually have a meeting they have to get to and they're really disappointed that they have to leave, you know, but we
yeah.
do automatically jump to the negative. It never occurs to us to try to jump to a positive conclusion or to try to, predict a positive outcome in our fortune telling. It's always the negative.
Absolutely not. And I've been trying to think of a good machine analogy. Maybe I'll come up with one by the end of the time.
I put the pressure on you now. Think of a machine analogy while we're talking about all these other things.
Exactly. Well, I've got two machine stories. I'm trying to figure out how they fit in. I'll get it. But I think with the fortune telling, one of the biggest things that we do is we automatically assume that they're not going to use what we've shared or it's not going to make a difference. Or maybe we do the exact opposite and we believe that this is going to make a total change for them and, you know, and it may not change as much as we had wanted it to, or we may not hear back that it changed that much. Because we all share really important stuff. Whether or not we believe it, we do. If there's a reason why we're sharing it, it's important.
Yeah.
There's
all a reason you're on stage.
Exactly. It is. And there's a reason why people are gathered there to hear from you. Because basically they're learning something. So here's some examples of what happens when we get to those critical words in our head and those expectations of, I've got to do this. I really should do this for my presentation to be great. I should have stayed up all night to make sure every detail was ready for this presentation. Even if I didn't add or change anything, I just feel more confident knowing that I had pored over it longer. And that's one that kind of takes me back to college. You know, if I didn't cram every second on the bus on the way to the university or, you know, right before the teacher walked in, then I was jinxing myself to flunk. And that's not so, but we think if I don't do this amount of prep work or I don't say it this way, then the whole thing's a flop.
Yeah, I think what's interesting about that too, the shoulds and the musts, is that so frequently the things that we say we should be doing or should be thinking or should whatever, so much of the time, they don't actually have anything to do with what we really want for ourselves. We're following some kind of arbitrary rules
mm-hmm.
or some sort of guidelines that we think that you're supposed to do and that if you do it, you'll be happy and fulfilled and, you know, everything will go the way you want it. When a lot of the time, this doesn't really have anything to do with what we want, but we start feeling guilty and we start feeling disappointed because we haven't reached some achievement that isn't even achievement that we want.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So I've got a couple more examples of this and using some different words, but I have another friend who talks about shooting all over yourself. And it kind of reminds me of like an explicative phrase, you know, but we do that a lot. I should, and we hold ourselves up. So if you don't use the word should, you may say something like, I have got to be the world's worst speaker. The conference chair came up to me and asked if I could end things about 15 minutes early, so people have got to be complaining during the breaks. Instead, maybe it has something to do with the conference center has an issue, or there's bad weather outside, but we take it personal.
Mm-hmm.
We may say something to ourselves like, I really ought to tell more jokes when I'm talking because people love humor, and if I make them laugh, they're going to remember me and what I have to say better. And you may not be really funny. When I try to be funny, it's awful. When I'm just me, it's a lot funnier.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, that brings to mind the whole public speaking for awkward dorks thing, because what I hear from a lot of my clients is, oh, I don't want to do this because it won't be professional, or I'd really love to present this way or present this topic or do this kind of crazy, silly thing on stage, but it's too weird, it's too dorky, it's too kooky, and people won't think I'm professional. And I hear that a lot, the word professional tied in with these kinds of shoulds. You should look a certain way, you should behave a certain way when you're on stage, and if you don't, you're not going to be considered professional. And mm-hmm. that, I think, is probably one of my biggest pet peeves. Because when people say I should be professional or I should look professional or whatever, they're really describing a gray button-down robot. That's what they think they need to be in order to be considered professional. And it's not about being human and being real, like what you were talking about earlier. It's about fitting into some mold of what some stock photo site says looks professional.
What people find professional is your knowledge, and there's certain ways that we present. I love the people, you know, I love the professors who came to class in jeans. You know, I loved that. There was something about them I almost respected more because they were themselves, and I almost trusted them more because I felt like they were them. So whether you're a jeans person or a suit, coat, and tie person, be who you are and what makes you come to your life and be most comfortable, and that in and of itself will keep your anxiety away.
Yeah, that's a good point. When you strive so hard to present yourself in a way that's not congruent with who you really are, that just adds to your stress and anxiety. That doesn't help it at all.
No. And in my mind, I grew up, I love watching black and white things and all that. And I also grew up in a family where Looney Tunes was a very much a part of our routine. But I decided I wanted to be Audrey Hepburn. I have dark hair. I have fair skin. She's graceful. She's poised. And every time I try to be Audrey Hepburn, I look like a stuck-up, awkward snob. And that is not me. I roll around the dirt. And people look at me funny, and I'm all stiff. But what I really decided is I'm a Lucille Ball. Brilliant woman. Talented woman. Didn't think she was funny naturally,
even though
on stage she came to life. But when I'm Lucy and I'm like, I just tripped, oops, my zipper's down, and I just point it out and keep going, people connect to that because like, oh, yeah. And even if they are a little bit more formal, they're like, well, she's being her, and they respect me for me, and I'm not trying to change who they are. And that comes across and helps with my anxiety more because instead of trying to put on an act, now I'm just representing me and all my glory.
Yeah, I love that. We could go off on these kinds of tangents all day about being real and embracing who you are and embracing your uniqueness. And sure, maybe there are one or two qualities of Audrey Hepburn that you like that, you know, you could incorporate, like, you know, I don't know, a cute dress or something, but you can't be her anyway. So, you know, pick and choose little things you like here and there, but apply it to who you already are as a person.
Exactly.
And like you say, you know, the audience can feel it and sense mm-hmm. it when you are shooting all over yourself. The audience can sense it. You know, they feel like you're up there saying, I should be doing this. I should be looking like that. I should be standing over here. I should be doing this with my hands. It's all really obvious when you are doing something that you think you should be doing, but that doesn't feel right to you and that isn't you. And so I think the shoulds, that is a really important one for people to remember.
Absolutely. So we're going to kind of move into the techniques. And before we do, I want to kind of give a couple of disclaimers. One of them is, again, because I'm kind of this solution type of person, I want to give you more tips and more ways to cope with anxiety than actual types of anxiety. So that's why I gave you three and some examples, and I'm getting ready to give you a lot more ways to do it. For some of these, I might say specifically, oh, this tip will really help if you struggle with jumping to conclusions or trying to mind read what your audience is thinking. But for the most part, all of these strategies are kind of interchangeable. So you don't have to get specific and say, oh, yeah, that one's me. That's something I struggle with. If you do, great. And while we're going through this, jot down those that feel comfortable for you to try. Because not everything works for everybody, and that's okay. But pick those that seem the easiest for you to implement. Because if you're already feeling anxious, we've already got a little bit of resistance. So if I try to do something that's harder for me and a lot more out of my comfort zone, I've just made my anxiety increase more. So pick those that seem the easiest, the most, the closest to you and who you are to try, and you'll actually have better success. There's no one that's better than any of the others. So going into that, when we're speaking or when we're doing anything, one of the things that we do with this anxiety is we compare. And we compare what we know and what we see of people. Well, most of us are kind of private about our disappointments or our failures or even our embarrassing moments. So what ends up happening is because I am the genius of my life and I can quote the nicknames that I have threatened my family members never to utter or else their certain death. I don't know that about the person over there. So I see her and I think, oh my gosh, the wind totally messed up my hair. I just sneezed. My makeup must have run all over the place because my eyes watered when I did it. And I'm thinking, she looks perfectly coiffed and I look like I just came off the set of The Wizard of Oz, you know. So what we do is we compare ourselves at our worst because I know all the nitty-gritty details of how bad I am or how I think I'm bad. And I compare it to somebody else's best. Or what I perceive as their best, because I don't know their dirty laundry. I don't know their fears. I don't see them having a panic attack, so I think they're cool and collected underneath there. So keep in mind that when we compare, it's not an equal comparison. We're comparing ourselves at our worst to them at their best, and it's not always what it seems. So just because you think it does not make it true. And that's big in terms of anxiety of any kind. So while we're kind of going through some things today, you may have already thought of, oh my gosh, that totally happened to me when I was talking. Or, oh yes, I had a friend that had that. Some of these stories may be, you know, jolting some memories for you. I want you to jot them down. And I also want you to jot down some of the thoughts that you've had, too, along the way. So it may not be, okay, I feel like I'm horrible when I try to make a joke or I try to tell a story to my audience. But you may have thought about things of, oh, yeah, I've wished that. Oh, yeah, I've thought this. Oh, yeah, that didn't happen or come true. So I want you to get realistic about all the thoughts that you've had in your life, positive, negative, funny, whatever they are. And I want you to think about how many of those worries you've had haven't happened. And the reason why I want to focus on that in terms of this is our brain, and I'll spare you all the neuroscience that makes my inner geek come out, but our brain is wired to go negative. And the reason why is that's kept us safe from lions and tigers and bears throughout history.
Oh,
and
my.
It's if they wondered if we were dorks, they now know, have no doubt about that.
That was official dorkness right there.
So these things keep us safe, even as far as when you're driving down the road and you see this car that's like inched out past the stop sign, and so you think, I need to slow down in case they do something stupid like pull out, and then they do, and you're glad you listened. Those worries have kept us safe many times, and so it makes it easier for us to trust them in the future, whether or not they're realistic. But the reality is we've all thought more fears and more worries than have actually happened. But somehow in our mind, the only times we remember are the times when that worry came true instead of all the times it just melted away into nothing. So I want you to kind of do the opposite, and this is a strategy with your anxiety in general, and even just kind of a side note, is make a list of the good things that have happened. And there's nothing too trivial to write down. It can be something as much as, I had been craving ice cream, and lo and behold, I got it. You know, doesn't matter. Let's think about all those positive things that happened, because we're trying to rewire that worry and that trust in yourself. So let's get into those strategies. What do you think, Lisa?
I think that's good. I keep wanting to interrupt you, or not interrupt, but say, oh, yeah, and I this thing and that thing, and I feel like I just need to let you talk now.
Oh, okay.
So just
all right.
Go for it. Go for it.
So the first thing is going back to something Lisa and I have both shared throughout the call, and that's to focus on your strengths instead of the areas where you don't feel as strong or as natural in your speaking. And that's actually one of the first exercises I do with all of my clients is I say, go home, make a list of all the things that you do well. And they look at me like I have three heads, because they can come up with 50 things that they hate, and to come up with even just two or three things that they love, it's harder than walking on Legos across a room. So if you think that you don't deliver a punchline well, don't force yourself to tell jokes throughout your presentation. But if you want to bring in humor, why don't you show a funny YouTube clip? Or why don't you do some type of icebreaker that gets your audience moving and off? But you don't have to be the funny yourself. So think about your strengths, and you deliver your strengths and use other resources or tools to deliver on those other things that just aren't your thing. Another one is to have a ritual that you do before speaking. And I was almost nervous putting them together because I was really trying to apply them to speaking. And I was thinking, oh gosh, I bet Lisa has all these better details than I have for this stuff. But with your ritual, you can think about maybe the weekend before, or it might be the night before, or the morning of. It could even be something that you do 30 minutes before you go on stage. But have something familiar that you go through that helps to soothe your nerves. It could be something as simple as watching your favorite movie the night before, or it could have a special bag that you only use when you speak or you present or do classes that you take with you, and you know you have certain things in certain pockets or parts of the bag that are always there. You never have to worry about not having your chapstick on stage or whatever. You could have a certain breakfast that you always eat that morning, or you have a certain pair of shoes that you always wear because they're comfortable and you get compliments on them. But we want to keep it simple, and we want to do the things that work for you that help to soothe you. And that's what it's going to do from a scientific point of view, is it actually gets your brain in a familiar mode. So it takes these strengths and these things that are comfortable to you, and it gets your brain in that place and pulling from the part of your brain that has calming than the part that has you on edge and excited and on alert.
Well, you've just inspired me. I am going to interrupt really briefly.
Go for it.
You've inspired me to add another handout to the links on the left side of the page, because I do have an ebook about preparation rituals, because I agree this is a really, really a really great way to reduce your anxiety before you speak is to have certain kinds of rituals that work for you that are easy to do. They have to be things that you can do no matter where you are, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of, you know, elite athletes have rituals. You'll see performers who always they always do a certain thing, or they carry a certain thing. Some people wear a certain pair of socks before they go out and play their sport. And rituals help a lot of people, as long as it doesn't become a crutch and you can't perform if you don't have that thing. So
right.
I'm going to add that as one of the handouts, my ebook on preparation rituals for speaking.
Ooh.
So I'm glad you brought this up.
I'm impressed that you have a whole book on that. I have one paragraph and you have a whole book.
You know, I actually interviewed some people. I interviewed some like celebrities and various, I was going all out on this. I was going to make a full on book. And by the way, that's one of my shoulds. I should have a book because I'm a coach and a speaker. I should have a book. And that's a hard one. That's a hard should for me to get over, you know? Anyway, so yes, I've got a whole ebook just on preparation rituals.
All right, so let's go on to another technique. And this one's one that I don't mean for it to, like, personally hit anyone, but I think we all can relate to procrastinating a little bit, and we all feel a little guilty about it. I can't tell you the number of people who tell me I work better under pressure. And honestly, that's true for all of us. That, again, is another reason why anxiety has a positive place in our lives and why we keep doing it, because it is effective. Whether or not we love it, it makes us do some things. But when we feel prepared and we have a plan, that's one of the most effective ways for taking your anxiety away, regardless of which three of those thinking styles it may be. But when you don't know what to expect or you don't have a plan, your brain comes up with an answer, whether or not it's the right one. And so it's, oh my gosh, you forgot your shoes, you have to go on stage barefoot, instead of, oh, well, your friend has the same size shoes, borrow some, or there's a store around the corner. So our brain will, in that state of panic, just fill in stuff that doesn't fit. So when we procrastinate, what we do is we increase those unknowns, and therefore we're increasing that anxiety. So one thing I've found is when you're prepping, when you first get the invitation, often we tend to be more excited, again, the positive form of anxiety. So capture that energy right then. Take that 3 minutes and go on and write down the ideas. Oh, yeah, I want to make sure I do this. Oh, yeah. And one of the secrets is wherever you write it down, make sure you remember where it is. So put it in your planner, your phone, in a memo or whatever. But capture that at the beginning. And I know for a lot of speakers, we talk to ourselves. We talk through things in the shower, in front of the mirror, in the car. So maybe record it on one of those memos on your phone. Capture as many of these ideas as you can when you're getting them. And even if you haven't connected it all together, it's still making you feel more prepared than waiting to the last minute to let that momentum and those nerves propel you forward. Even if you think you're going to remember something later, capture it in some way. I can't tell you the number of wonderful analogies and stories that I have lost because I thought, oh, this is so good and unique, I will remember this. And the next day I'm like, what was that thing again? So keep them written down, and you'll actually open up the flow for them to continue happening. And that seems like an easier way, I think, to avoid procrastination is to just capture it as it comes. And luckily, with all of our devices that we have these days, we can do that without it being too much of a hassle. The next one is something that I'm kind of going to steal from teaching, and it's a word that when I hear it, I honestly sometimes roll my eyes, but here's where we're going to go with it. We're going to make a rubric. So if you do teach, you know exactly where I'm going with this. But what this specifically does is that all or nothing thinking, kind of that black and white, they hate me, they love me, everybody else is calm, I'm the nervous wreck. What it does is it helps us come up with some things so we can be realistic about it. So in this rubric, what I want you to do is write down the things that make up a good presentation of something you would be proud to give and have associated with you. Then in the next section, write down some things that might take a little bit of work or a little bit of extra calls for props or things like that, and write that down in the middle section. And then the next one is to write down an over-the-top version of delivering your speech. So maybe that's arriving on the stage in a helicopter, you know, or whatever. And what this does is it helps to set you up for success, because you know, if I deliver this, if I do this part, then I'm doing damn good and I'm hitting something that I'm proud of. If I stretch and I add any part to this, whether it's incorporating food to the audience up there or something funny, then I will feel like I really grew as a speaker. And if I do this, it's just so over the top, I'm going to poke fun of myself. And now you're able to find a way to take it to the next level without putting undue stress on yourself that you don't even know if you get there. We've got to have a way to measure it so we can know, wow, I'm doing better than I thought. Another way to work through some of this anxiety is to be aware of constraints. And those constraints can be anything from time to cost to sickness to things that you're juggling behind the scenes. And so the point of this is to be kind and realistic when it comes to evaluating what you did on stage. We never know when we're asked in advance. I almost shudder. I had someone who asked me to speak for something like about 10 months in advance, and I'm sitting here going, I don't know what's going on in my life then. No. Which with speaking, that's actually very common to go on and get people lined up a long time in advance. And I always think, well, what if I'm sick? Because once something's in my calendar, I kind of part the Red Sea to make it happen. So I would be up there with the flu hacking and delivering my speech because that's, you know, my OCD coming out. But be aware of, you know what, I had just had the flu or I had just had a death in my family. And no, it was not what my ideal was. But under the circumstances, I truly did the best I could do. And being kind to yourself with those things will help you to look on your speaking in a positive way and to not think, I'm a horrible speaker, and go back to everyone in the audience hated me because I didn't do what I had planned on doing. Another one is to notice others more. So if you truly believe that nobody else gets nervous before they speak, you're probably going to miss out on their signals that they are nervous. So instead, you're going to cue in more to what your own body's saying instead of noticing the positive things about others. So my challenge to you is, for fun, take note of the ways that other people might be nervous. So maybe you're waiting for your car to get repaired, and you think, oh, everybody else is happy, and I'm the only one cranky today. And then you start noticing that, you know, somebody else in the waiting room shaking their leg really hard, or they cough every 3 seconds. But start to take note of people around you who might be feeling a little anxious too, and then you'll be like, oh, my gosh, I'm normal. I'm not the weirdo after all.
I like that. You know, you can do that too, just watching your favorite performance TV shows, you know, American Idol, Dancing with the Stars, whatever kinds of shows that you like, The Voice, where people have to get on a stage and, excuse me, and perform. You'll see that all the time and you can really tell. And it just, you know, I think it also helps a little bit with our compassion toward other people, but also towards ourselves, because when you see somebody's nervous and you realize they're nervous, you don't want to laugh at them or you don't want to judge them. You feel empathy for them and you hope they do a good job. And that's how the audience feels about you. But sometimes we think it's such a terrible thing if we're nervous or look nervous. Which most of us don't anyway. Most of us don't look nervous at all, even when we are. But when you can really see it in somebody, you feel compassion for them. You don't feel like evil. You know, you don't want to do an evil laugh and rub your hands together and go, I hope they fall off the stage, you know? And I think it's a good thing to put yourself in the shoes of the audience and remember that when you're an audience member, you wish the best for the people on stage, and they wish that for you.
Yeah, absolutely. So I have three more tips I'm going to share.
Go for it.
One of them, and this kind of goes into the ritual, but instead of the ritual before you go on stage, I want to invite you to plan something fun to do after your presentation. So it may be something like a glass of wine that you're having a toast, yeah, I did it. It may be going to your favorite relaxing spot, whether it's the creek or a kayak trip. But have something that's going to help you unwind. And when you have some of those tense moments, when you think about that, that's going to power you through. And most of the time, those nerves are before you get out there. Once you are going, the nerves are there, but they're nowhere near as powerful or as paralyzing once you're on the stage for many people. There are some people where it's different, but that'll help power you through before you go out there. The other thing is it's going to help your brain to file things differently. So when I have a speech, and maybe I did you know, two or the three things that I wanted to do great, and then that third thing just kind of tanked. So naturally afterwards, my brain's going to go, crap, I can't believe I didn't do that, instead of focusing on those two positives. But if I go and I do this thing I've looked forward to, because my brain's now going to a positive place, when I look back on that whole experience, I'm much more likely to remember those two things that I nailed instead of that one thing that was so-so. The second of these last three tips that I want to share is one that's going to help with the jumping to conclusions and the mind reading piece. And again, we've kind of mentioned before, just because nobody's talking or contributing, it doesn't mean that they're not listening. Just because they're all looking at their phones, it doesn't mean that they're surfing Facebook. Just because everyone is looking right at you, it also doesn't mean that they're absorbing everything that you say either. So when we're trying to avoid fortune telling and mind reading, we want to be aware of other possibilities. So if you're one of those people, and I know I was this way when I used to teach, I hated computers in the classroom because for them, they weren't typing and taking notes. They were doing other things like looking at porn, and it was really kind of scary and sad. So, but now I don't know how we get along without this stuff. It's been several years since I taught in a classroom, so everything's changed now. But we take notes at presentations. We have our computers. We do this. So if you're nervous about that and you automatically jump to the conclusion of, if they're on an electronic device, I must be horrible, try to find a way to incorporate that in. So come up with a hashtag and say, please tweet this or use this on Facebook. Have an event page on Facebook and invite them to post questions there, you know, and then you can actually pull it up if you have a projector or something on screen and show what people are saying, or you can use that for your question and answer period. It may be an easier way for shy people to take part in your presentation. So just think of other possibilities in regards to the things that kind of set you off a little. And then the last
can
one.
Can I throw yeah. one thing in here too?
Yeah.
First of all, yeah, I don't tell people to put their phones away. In fact, sometimes when I'm introduced, the introducer says, okay, everybody put your phones away. And I'll come out and say, you don't have to put your phones away. Because for me, that's actually one of the ways I take notes. Mm-hmm. And what I try to do is keep the phone out in front of me. And somebody mentioned this recently. They said, I just ask people to keep the phones out where they're visible, so that you don't look like you're being surreptitious and like texting, but just keep the phone out where we can all see it. And, you know, we know you're taking notes or you're tweeting or whatever it is related to the presentation. And one of the things, so I like that idea, first of all, I thought I might steal that. But one of the things that I do as well while people have their phones in their hands is I say, I always tell them I don't have enough good pictures of me on my website presenting. So anybody who gets a good image of me during the presentation, good enough image that I will put it on my website, I'll send them a free ebook.
Ooh.
And, you know, I figure, hey, you got your phone there. Use it to take a good picture of me. So
yeah.
That, you know, that, and that makes it kind of fun and not like a shameful thing to have your phone
yeah.
sitting out on the desk. But it's just another way of using the technology that we all have anyway. We all have it sitting there right in front of us. So let's be pragmatic, right? Like you say, and, you know, use it to tweet. You get on a Facebook group, make some comments, take pictures, share with your friends.
Yeah.
And then we don't have to be jumping to conclusions that they're distracted.
Exactly. Exactly. I know sometimes I've been listening to something and I've had a client text me in crisis, one of my therapy clients, and, you know, and I feel bad because maybe I'm really listening to the speaker and they're going to think, oh, I'm thinking for them. Again, I'm mind reading from the audience going, they're going to think I don't care and I hate this presentation. I'm trying to talk this person off a ledge. And
yeah.
by doing so, it allows me to actually stay there and hear more of what they're saying. And so, you know, it goes both ways. I think, you know, sometimes we in the audience mind read what our speaker's thinking when they may not even care.
That's true. And I'm one of those speakers. If I see somebody looking at their phone, I figure it's probably a pretty good reason. Because mm-hmm. most adults are really not that rude where they would just like completely ignore you. And I just tend to think, you know what, I'm a pretty engaging speaker. I'm pretty good at keeping people's attention. And if they're looking at their phone, it's not because of me. And then furthermore, I do go a step further from that. And if a lot of people seem to be looking at their phones or drifting off, well, then I know that it is me. And then I do something to switch it up, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, that's where you were talking about reading the audience earlier. You know, if one or two people are doing something, that's one thing. But if the balance starts to tip and it seems like people are shifting their butts in their chairs and a lot of people are looking at their phones, then you know you got to do something to wake them up.
Yep, exactly. So my last tip to help all of you is going to really pertain to the shoulds and the oughts and the musts that we have to do. And we're going to try to reframe it so that if they happen, we're not disappointed. I used to, a few years ago, I was an editor for a local magazine, and every time a new issue would come out, the local news would have me on in the morning show, crack of dawn, I'm up there being interviewed about what's in this new issue. And the first time I went, I was so nervous, I was like, really? I've done speaking before. Why am I nervous? I can't see the audience. But I think because I knew it was going to be on TV all over, I was like, about to shake out of my skin. So my mom is home watching it, and I get done, and I'm like, so what did you think? And she's like, you were great, but you said the word absolutely three times. And I was like, oh, my gosh, it was a two-minute interview, and I said one word three times. So the next month I go back, and the news anchor is talking to me, and over the years we developed a friendship, and I told her about what happened, and she started laughing, said, ah, don't worry about it. Wouldn't you know, I said the word one time. And after the clip was done, we both busted out laughing. So the next month I go, the news anchor says, you know what? I've been saying absolutely on air a lot, and I've been noticing it. And I'm going, oh, crap, I've ruined the news anchor. I have rubbed off on her. But it became to be this joke between all of us where it was, you know, I always said absolutely one time during the interview. And by reframing it into something that was a joke with everybody, it was something that now I wasn't nervous about. And the interviews kept getting easier and easier, and I wasn't nervous. We didn't even rehearse them anymore. We didn't even do talking points anymore. We would just get up there and go with them because we got so relaxed. So ending on that note with the shoulds and the musts and all that, one of my favorite authors is Shel Silverstein, and he wrote a lot of children's things. He did some stuff for adults too, but I think that children's literature has the most profound insights in it. And so this poem of his says, listen to the mustn'ts, child, listen to the don'ts. Listen to the shouldn'ts, the impossibles, the won'ts. Listen to the never haves and listen close to me. Anything can happen, child. Anything can be. And I love that in regards to all these shoulds that we're doing all over ourselves that we have to do, that people are telling us, okay, I should do this. You shouldn't do this. You must do this. Ourselves, people around us. And the reality is I don't have to do that to be a good speaker. I can go out there dressed like Bozo the Clown and give a motivational speech that changes lives. I don't have to follow the rules to do something well and to be helpful and remembered to my audience. So break the rules.
Oh, another thing we have in common. How did you know that I like to dress up like Bozo the Clown when I go on stage?
I didn't know that part, but I have heard you talk about a costume.
Oh, I haven't done a costume yet, but you never know. There's still time. I love your points. Thank you so much. I'm going to recap really quickly just so that, you know, we remind everybody what are these unhelpful thinking styles. And I think people are going to actually want to listen to this call again and hear you talk about this again. I think people are going to really want to absorb it because it's so good. So we talked about all or nothing thinking, that very black and white way of thinking. We talked about jumping to conclusions and mind reading and fortune telling, which I think was very clearly put by Tammy, and then shoulds and musts and shoulding all over yourself. and the kinds of rules that we tell ourselves we have to follow even when we don't want to and we don't feel connected to them. And these were really, really great points. And then Tammy gave us some really helpful ways to reverse those thinking styles. And so I do hope that that there was something on this call that you felt was relevant to you and that felt like something that you can address, something that you've noticed that happens with you and your sort of negative thinking style, and that you can address through some of these solutions that Tammy gave at the end, because this is all really, really helpful. I love the rubric, I have to say, although I have no idea what one looks like. And I've heard rubric a million times from teachers, but I've never actually seen one. So maybe draw one for me so I can see what it looks like.
It's just really a chart. Like, it can be as simple as you draw two columns and you draw three lines. So you've got maybe a total of six boxes, and you put good enough presentation that I'm happy with it.
Oh, God.
Kicking it up a notch, and then over the top. And then you just fill in the three boxes. I mean, that's as simple as a rubric. You don't have to make them look like an Excel spreadsheet.
See, that's what I always wondered, if it was just like a simple chart, like kind of like boxes. But it sounds like that's what it is.
Yeah.
I love that exercise. I hope some people listening on this call will consider trying that out. I might use that with some of my clients, because it seems like a really helpful way to get a realistic view of what's possible, not – you know, this far thing on the far side that's just, like you said, way over the top, and not like the thing that's so easy you could do it in your sleep, because I really encourage people to get out of their comfort zones, but that thing that's in the middle that has maybe some elements of the extreme version and some elements of the easy version, but something that you'll be proud of.
Yeah.
I liked how you put that. So I believe that you have a special gift for our listeners, and would you share what that is?
I do, and it is. So like I told you, in my world, I'm getting ready to take a 9-month course that goes in depth on these thinking styles, because I can't get geeked out enough. So we hit on three of them, but there's actually 10. And like I said, they're all kind of related to each other. So my gift for you is a handout that has all of these there, and it's very simple. Don't think this is very complicated. It's a chart. You can glue it in your planner. You can put it on your desk if you want to, because they're helpful in all areas of your life and dealing with anxiety. And when you sign up for them, if you want to keep talking a little bit more about stress and anxiety, you'll also get, every Sunday I send out a weekly conversation, and that's where you'll get all my analogies and stories about the machines that I break. but you can find out more about how to put some of these things into action a little bit more in your life. But the handout has all 10 of those thinking styles that just kind of cripple you and make your anxiety go up a few notches.
Thanks. I really appreciate your sharing that with the group. When I got the handout in the class that I was in your class, I thought it was really well done. It's really easy to read and really easy to understand. So I think it's going to be really helpful to, you know, not just to understand the three that you talked about today, but to look at all 10 of them, because we all do these things from time to time, and they're going to be helpful for public speaking. But as you said, they're going to be helpful in all aspects of our lives, because we do this stuff all the time.
Absolutely.
So for those of you who are listening, who are listening to the call, you'll get the link in the email. And those of you who are on the Instant Teleseminar website, you'll see Tammy's link on the left-hand side of the screen. It'll say download Tammy's handout. And you'll just be able to go grab it. And I do highly recommend that you read Tammy's newsletter. I'm telling you, it's so entertaining, and it's so much fun to read because of the way that she takes her own stories, things that happen in her own life every day, and applies them to some concepts of stress, anxiety, general mental health. But her writing is so fun and so easy to read, and it's not academic. it's not boring. It's not therapist, psychologist type writing.
No.
It's just really human, fun stories. This is how I learned about how Tammy has a lot of socks that she never wears from one of her articles. And there's a whole story behind the socks that maybe you'll hear sometime. And so it's a really great newsletter. If you don't have to be a person who struggles with anxiety, you can just be a person who occasionally has some crappy stress in your life, and you'll get a ton out of her newsletter. And you'll also see the various classes that she does. She does a lot of virtual programs so that all you have to do is listen on the phone or online. And she also has she does some telesummits where she invites different people to speak. So she'll bring in a bunch of experts to talk about a particular topic. So definitely sign up for her newsletter so that you can get all that information. So I'm just going to wrap up really quickly and let you know that this recording is only going to be available until Monday, March 2nd, because this is an Audience Avenger Alliance speaker series interview. I do make them available to the public for a short time, but after the 3 or 4 day period where they're available to the public, I take them down and I put them into the Audience Avenger Alliance archives. So they become the property of basically the people who are members of that program. So if you do want to have further access to this recording after March 2nd and recordings of all the other speaking and business experts that I have interviewed, and a whole bunch of other awesome resources and articles and various tools for speaking, you might want to consider joining the Audience Avenger Alliance, where all of these resources are housed. And the link is coachlisab.com/audienceavengeralliance.html. But you'll get a link in the email again if you are somebody who registered for this call, which you are if you're listening to it right now. You'll get the link by email, and then also on the left-hand side of the screen, you'll see an Audience Avenger Alliance link as well. And so I want to thank Tammy again for a really, really packed, informative, super interesting call, and I hope that you will take some of these little tools, very simple tools and ways to change your thinking, and start applying them to your speaking and turn your negative thoughts around into positive thoughts. So thank you again, Tammy Witten.
Thank you. You made me blush while ago.
I love it. And thank you to all who are listening and who are listening to the recording after the fact. And I will see you around in the newsletter, on social media, and hopefully in the Audience Avenger Alliance. Take care.